from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Congress will move forward with articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump over his dealings with Ukraine. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said today that lawmakers had no choice but to act.
The facts are uncontested. The president abused his power for his own personal political benefit at the expense of our national security.
Pelosi's announcement comes one day after the House Judiciary Committee held its first impeachment inquiry hearing yesterday with testimony from four law professors. And coming up on Forum, we'll talk about that hearing, the Democrats' debate over the scope of impeachment charges, and what comes next. Join us after the news. Welcome to this morning's Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi this morning asked committee chairs to draw up articles of impeachment, and Chair Pelosi was asked by a reporter to respond to charges the Democrats are doing this because they hate the president.
This is about the Constitution of the United States and the facts that lead to the president's violation of his oath of office. And as a Catholic, I resent your using the word hate in a sentence that addresses me. I don't hate anyone. I was raised in a way that is full, a heart full of love, and always prayed for the president, and I still pray for the president. I pray for the president all the time. So don't mess with me when it comes to words like that.
The announcement comes after a full day of contentious hearings in the House Judiciary Committee, and in this hour, we're going to discuss impeachment and the hearings, which continue on Monday. Joining us initially here is Anna Edgerton. We're going to go to Washington and talk with her. She's politics editor for Bloomberg, and welcome, Anna. Good to have you.
Great. Thanks for having me.
I guess the place to begin is with Speaker Pelosi. She's going to have to some extent, round up the troops here. I mean, to some extent, isn't she? Because the fact of the matter is that the Democrats are probably split on what to go forward with.
There is some division between amongst Democrats on strategy, especially on the scope of impeachment articles, whether or not they should include some of the other investigations that predate the Ukraine allegations. But Democrats are actually remarkably united in moving forward with impeachment. In general, there's only two, maybe three, who are at risk of voting against articles of impeachment on the floor.
But are Democrats at risk? She was asked this today after her talk. Are they at risk in certain districts because of going against President Trump vis-a-vis his base?
Yeah, I mean, some, especially moderate Democrats in swing districts, could face some political blowback from this. But Pelosi had a really interesting answer to this question. You know, she said, this isn't about politics. This is about the Constitution. And she's always said that you shouldn't impeach for political reasons. You shouldn't impeach for political gain. But you also shouldn't not impeach because of political calculations. And she has said that in this instance, the offenses of the president were so grave, as she described it, that she had no choice but to go forward with impeachment, that her oath to the Constitution and the oath that lawmakers take as members of the legislative branch require this step regardless of the consequences.
I'm wondering, though, what your sense is politically of how this is, you know, the old phrase, the old cliche, playing in Peoria, particularly when you think about not only the support from the president's base, but the kind of blowback that now is hitting, for example, those who testified yesterday. You had three distinguished legal scholars testifying in favor of impeachment, and they were called liberal lunatics by Sean Hannity, and they were called pathological by Newt Gingrich. I mean, the more strident supporters of the president. And I'm wondering if your sense is that this will indeed be a hard mountain for the Democrats to climb, that there will be a lot of pushback.
Well, it's really a hard moment for the country, and you can see that not just with these constitutional scholars who testified yesterday, but also with the career diplomats and public servants who testified 2 weeks ago in the fact-finding part of the investigation. There is just such a risk that these people take in putting themselves in the public eye, especially in such a divided political moment in the United States. And it's really sad that we have people with such strong followings, like you mentioned, Sean Hannity, Newt Gingrich, people who have a lot of respect in certain circles for, you know, maybe their conservative views or pushing back on what they would describe as the mainstream media, that they use that platform to, you know, so doubt and so hatred. And it really is a tough thing going forward and will be a tough thing to overcome in 2020.
Is there going to be more to add to essentially what the Democrats are trying to build in the way of a case? By that, I mean, there has been certainly intimations and hints of more evidence accumulated. There's been a lot of talk about following through on Rudy Giuliani's machinations in Ukraine and so forth. At this point, what do you see?
Well, two things the committee chairman, especially Adam Schiff of the Intelligence Committee, have said. One, that he's not going to play rope-a-dope in the courts, that he is not going to sit around and wait for, you know, a process to enforce subpoenas to go through the court. They're not going to wait for John Bolton's testimony and Mick Mulvaney's testimony, even though those people and their comments could bolster the case. Democrats have said that the facts they have are pretty non-disputed, that there are, you know, certain facts about when calls took place and what was said, and that's enough to go forward with impeachment. However, Schiff and other chairmen have also said that they're not going to end the investigations now. So even as these articles of impeachment move forward, they will continue their investigation. They will continue calling witnesses. And if we get a court decision, we could see them calling back some of those witnesses that had more direct interactions with the president.
Ann Edgerton, again, is politics editor for Bloomberg. Anna, good to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on Forum.
Thank you.
And we're talking about Speaker Pelosi instructing the House committee chairs to move forward with impeachment. And to talk about impeachment, David Levine is joining us here in studio. He's professor of law at UC Hastings College of Law. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Michael.
So where do we go from here, particularly in light of what we heard yesterday in the Judiciary Committee? We had three distinguished scholars saying the president indeed has committed high crimes and misdemeanors. And you had another distinguished scholar, Jonathan Turley, saying this is too early, too premature, and wrong.
Right. I mean, that's certainly true that that was the lineup. Of course, three of them were selected by the Democrats and they went that way. And the one who was picked by the Republicans, Professor Turley, said maybe not quite yet. I mean, he didn't say the conduct was unimpeachable. What he said was he wasn't sure that the case was rock solid and that it would be better if the country were behind it, not so divided. But at the end of the day, even Professor Turley had to admit that trading the money for Ukraine for an announcement on television about an investigation was impeachable conduct. He just wasn't sure you could tie up every single thing into a bow.
Well, he was also, in addition to constitutional concerns, he seemed concerned about the timing on this. And the irony in many ways is that Democrats are moving rather fast, to put it mildly, compared to previous impeachments. We haven't had that many. But nevertheless, you had President Trump saying we should move fast.
Right. I think the Republicans' calculation is that they will be on friendlier territory once they get under the welcoming arms of Mitch McConnell in the Senate. It's going to look night and day when you have Chairman Nadler or Chairman Schiff running the show versus Leader McConnell. And if the president has to get impeached, you might as well just move on and then they can do what they want to in the Senate. It'll just look totally different.
A lot came up yesterday in the judiciary hearings about Article 1 and Article 2. Can you help us get some clarity on this? I don't want to get too much in the weeds here, but a lot of people are sort of shaking their heads, wondering, what's the difference? The president said I can do anything I want under Article 2. Where are we?
Right. Well, the president's wrong about that, flat out. You remember from high school civics, if that course is still taught, or high school government, we are a government of checks and balances. We're a government of three branches, and they have different jobs. Congress is Article 1, meaning they are first, and that they are the ones who write the legislation, who pass the legislation, and then the check on them is the president can veto. But the checks go back and forth, and one of the checks is Congress's power to impeach. It's absolutely part of the constitutional structure.
And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about equal balance of power, and I happen to come across an article by Gary Wills, who I have a lot of respect for, and essentially the thesis of this is that Congress has more power and should have more power, and that includes, of course, subpoenaing people. And he makes this argument on the basis of Congress can impeach. They can impeach those in the judiciary. They can impeach those in the executive. And those other branches of government cannot impeach.
Well, that's true. It is certainly a power that was reserved for Congress. And in fact, the Constitution says that the sole power of impeachment shall rest with the House. So it definitely is one of the powers that the Congress was given. The president obviously has power. The judiciary has power. But there is an argument to be made that Congress is Article One because they're first.
We're talking with David Levine, professor of law at UC Hastings College of the Law, and we're talking about the announcement earlier by Speaker Pelosi that the impeachment articles will be moved forward on. And we have a cut yesterday from Stanford Law Professor Pamela Karlan.
When President Trump invited, indeed demanded, foreign involvement in our upcoming election, he struck at the very heart of what makes this a republic to which we pledge allegiance. That demand, as Professor Feldman just explained, constituted an abuse of power. Indeed, as I want to explain in my testimony, drawing a foreign government into our elections is an especially serious abuse of power because it undermines democracy itself.
Well, that was certainly a strong and, in many instances, by many lights, convincing argument, at least part of what was going forward, that foreign government should not be allowed in our election processes. However, we had not only abuse of power in yesterday's hearings, we had talk of bribery, we had talk of obstruction of justice, and we had talk of the Mueller report. I mean, what's going to come out of really the Democrats deciding where to put their focus, where to laser?
Right now, we don't know. Because Speaker Pelosi this morning announced that she basically had given authorization to the chairs led by Chairman Nadler to start writing articles of impeachment. And one of the issues, as the reporter at the top had said, is do they go narrow, meaning focus just on Ukraine, or do they go broad? And that would include the Mueller investigation, potentially, although unlikely, the emoluments issue, and on and on and on. So it is a strategic choice whether you go narrow or broad. If we look at the Nixon impeachment, if we look at the Clinton impeachment, they ended up with a very small number of articles of impeachment. And I assume that's where we're going to be here. Two, three, four tops.
Talking again with Professor David Levine. And as things begin to unfurl here, particularly when the Democrats go into operation of drawing these articles of impeachment, people are going to say more and more that the Democrats are not paying attention to their duties and their responsibilities in Congress. That's an argument that we keep hearing. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this, particularly in light of the fact that we're going to have perhaps more information about Devin Nunes, who was in charge of essentially the operation for the Republicans, now being perhaps compromised and compromised in some dramatic ways by what he was doing and making phone calls to Ukraine.
Right. It certainly looks as if he was playing on both sides of the line. You'll remember that early on he did that with the White House when he was chair of the committee and he went to the White House secretly and then he said, I have some papers, I have to bring it to the White House. So he's played both sides of the line for some time. He had to recuse himself on the Russian investigation as the chair. So it may be a distraction. I do think what the Democrats need to do is to keep reminding people there is a lot of legislation that has been passed that is sitting on Leader McConnell's desk. The number one thing that I think, or let's say two things that the Democrats do need to move on, I think, is one is the budget. Absolutely. We need to have a budget for so that the federal government doesn't fall apart. And
excuse me, they are getting worked on. They got something on robocalls through the Congress.
There you go. All right. There you go. And they probably named a post office or something like that as well. And then the other is it does seem as if behind the scenes they are continuing to work on this new trade agreement with Canada and Mexico, the so-called USMCA. And it may be that that'll go through. But a lot of legislation has been passed. They're perfectly able to walk and chew gum at the same time. They need time on the floor of the House and all that. But I do think they should probably, the Democrats should show we're continuing to move the ball on other things.
We also heard from President Trump that he actually had talked to the head of NATO and said, there are many legal scholars who agree with me. Do you know anything about legal scholars who, other than perhaps Jonathan Turley, who are agreeing with the president? Well, Alan Dershowitz, for example, has pretty much, hasn't he?
Right. He's one who, Professor Dershowitz certainly has been in the president's corner. And I mean, there's an argument to be made that it would be better to wait for the American people to vote next year. I think the counter argument to that, which has been well articulated, is because the offense that is alleged has to do with interfering with the propriety of next year's election, to say let's wait just allows more of that to take place. So I don't know that you're going to find many people in the professorate who would agree with the president.
Again, we're talking about Nancy Pelosi's announcement earlier this morning that articles of impeachment will be drawn up, and also talking about yesterday's hearings in the House Judiciary Committee with David Levine, Professor UC Hastings, College of the Law. I want to bring Ro Khanna into this discussion, representative of the U.S. Congress, 17th District. Congressman, good to have you. Morning.
Good to be back on.
I guess the place to begin with you is what I just alluded to with Professor Levine. That is, the argument is being made and will continue to be made that Congress isn't getting the work done that Congress should be doing because of these impeachment hearings and because of all the attention that's focused on them.
Well, that's a factually false narrative that the Republicans are driving. The reality is that the House Democrats have passed legislation on gun violence. We've passed legislation dealing with campaign finance reform. Just this week, we're getting ready to pass legislation to lower prescription drug costs, over 200 bills. But McConnell is not moving them. And when you had Watergate, Nixon in the height of Watergate still managed to work with Congress to pass the highway bill, to pass the War Powers Resolution. So the problem here is the Senate and the president, not the House.
And the Democrats are pretty unified. We heard earlier from a Bloomberg representative who joined us. I mean, do you see it that way? We were with Anna Edgerton early on, the politics editor for Bloomberg, who said there's really not that much division among the Democrats about what to really focus on and move forward with here.
It's the most unified I've seen the Democrats in my 3 years in Congress. The fact that Speaker Pelosi could announce moving forward with articles of impeachment today, just one day after the judiciary hearings, shows that you have a unanimity in the caucus, whether progressives or moderates or even the frontliners who just won their seat. I think there is a clear feeling that the president abused his office and we need to vote to impeach.
Well, let me have our listeners hear a cut from Jonathan Turley yesterday, and I'd like to get your response, Congressman.
So we're all mad. Where's that taken us? Will a slipshod impeachment make us less mad? Will it only invite an invitation for the madness to follow every future administration? That is why this is wrong. It's not wrong because President Trump is right. His call was anything but perfect. It's not wrong because the House has no legitimate reason to investigate the Ukrainian controversy. It's not wrong because we're in an election year. There is no good time for an impeachment. No, it's wrong because this is not how you impeach an American president.
That's George Washington University law professor Jonathan Turley testifying yesterday at the hearings, who said Democrats are moving too fast and that they were motivated largely by anger. And your response, Congressman?
This has nothing to do with being mad at Donald Trump. There have been many people I'm mad at in politics. I was mad at Mike Honda, who I ran against. This has to do with Donald Trump breaking the rule of law and whether we as a nation believe in standing up for the rule of law. And what I've told my Republican friends is look at other countries around the world where you have far left individuals get into power and then often ride roughshod over the rule of law. Do you want to set that precedent in the United States that a president can be arbitrary in the use of power? So this is not personal. It has nothing to do with anger or animus at Donald Trump. In fact, Donald Trump has signed two of my bills, and I'll continue to work on issues that help the American people. It's about standing up for the Constitution and the rule of law.
One of the other things, though, we heard from Professor Turley, Congressman, was that not only is this moving too fast, but this sets a bad precedent. In other words, if you move ahead on an impeachment and you do so particularly in an election year and you do so maybe for what can be perceived as political reasons, you are going to set a precedent, and I'm thinking particularly of Robert Bork, you're going to set a precedent that will later be all partisan in any presidential. I mean, a Democrat president will have to face impeachment charges for whatever.
I think the behavior here is so egregious. I mean, Pamela Karlan, who's the Stanford law professor, laid it out, I thought, beautifully yesterday, where she said if the president were to call up a governor, consider calling Governor Newsom and say, OK, I'm only going to give you aid for the wildfires if you brand Joe Biden a criminal and launch an investigation on Joe Biden, would anyone think that that was not impeachable conduct? I mean, the act here is so brazen. I do think if there was a future president who commits those kind of brazen attacks, there would be impeachment. But I don't think what we're going to move towards is a seesawing of impeachment back and forth, given how unusual and how outrageous the president's actions were.
Ro Khanna, good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me on.
Ro Khanna, U.S. Congressman for California's 17th District in Silicon Valley. He's also a member of the House Oversight Committee, House Budget Committee, and the House Armed Services Committee. And we'll be talking later with Congressman Tom McClintock, who, of course, is a Republican, and he'll be joining us later in the program. In the meantime, you can join us, and I invite you to do that. You can give us a call right now and be part of the program. If you have some thoughts about yesterday, about the ongoing impeachment process, about Speaker Pelosi's announcement earlier today that the articles of impeachment will indeed be drawn up. Let's hear from you. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Let me give you that number again, 866-733-6786. Or get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. Or email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org or post them at kqed.org/forum. Please, again, feel free to join the program. David Levine here with us in studio, professor of law at UC Hastings College of the Law. What about this precedent argument, David? You want to weigh in?
Well, yes, it is true that the prior impeachments create a precedent, but I don't think we would really get to a point where you would say just because there's a political difference that you'll get another impeachment. Not for a long time. That was a concern of the founders. The issue was, well, what ought to be an impeachable offense? And that one of the words that was proposed was maladministration, and that was pulled back because of the feeling that that would be just nothing but a policy dispute. And in effect, with Andrew Johnson, at the bottom, that's what that impeachment was about. It was a policy dispute about whether President Johnson could get rid of a member of his cabinet or not in the face of Congress wanting to go the other way. I think it's unlikely, as Congressman Kakana said, that we're going to see that, certainly in the near future. Could it happen 30 years down the line? Of course. But again, it's got to be a majority of the House and 2/3 of the Senate. And it is, let's hope, unlikely that we're going to see conduct like this, certainly in the foreseeable future of any future presidents.
Well, one of the positives in this is American public, particularly younger generation, learning a good deal about civics, our Constitution, our history, and look at the bright side on that. But let me get a caller on here. Rob? First up, good morning, Rob.
Good morning. Thank you. One thing that they did mention yesterday and I think needs to be brought out more and more is this idea that Trump is just looking for eliminating corruption in Ukraine. In other words, we're not going to give them money if they're corrupt. And the point that really goes against that is that from what I think it was Sondland or one of the other people testified, he didn't require that Zelensky actually do the investigation, just announce it, which is only reason to do that would just be to slander Biden. And if he's into corruption, he should have required him to do the investigation, not just said, you don't have to do the investigation. We just want it announced.
Rob, I think that's a fair argument. You also have to factor in the fact that President Trump has not exactly been zealous on corruption in other nations. I'm going to read some comments that are coming in. Thank you, Rob, for your call. We'll go to more calls after the break. And as I said, we'll be talking to Congressman Tom McClintock. Patrick writes, the Socialist Democrats are going to go down like the Titanic. This is going to ruin, if not destroy, the party. J.H. tweets, the denial of the truth by the GOP is clearly shown by the conduct of Rudy Giuliani, who in the middle of the hearings continues to break the law. He's currently in Ukraine pursuing dirt. He should be arrested or returned to the United States. Well, you certainly are welcome to weigh in, and we do want to hear your thoughts. You can join us, as I said earlier, by phone. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org or post them at kqed.org/forum. We'll continue. David Levine will stay with us. And as I said, we'll be talking also with Congressman Tom McClintock. Stay tuned. You're listening to Forum on KQED. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about Congresswoman Pelosi's announcement earlier today that the articles of impeachment will indeed be drawn up. And we're talking also about yesterday's hearings in the House Judiciary Committee. David Levine, professor of law at UC Hastings College of Law, with us here in studio. We also spoke earlier with Anna Edgerton, politics editor for Bloomberg, and also with Congressman Ro Khanna. And as I said, we're going to be joined also by Tom McClintock. Read a comment here from Peter, who wants us to know that the solution from his perspective would be adopt a joint resolution censuring the president for improper conduct. Such an action would put presidents on notice that manipulating foreign governments to extract personal political gain is unacceptable. In return, Democrats would agree to drop impeachment articles. What do you think about that, Professor Levine?
There's something to be said for it. If you think back with President Clinton, that was almost a compromise to do exactly that, to censure him. The problem is, for the Republicans, is that President Trump thinks that he did nothing wrong, and he wants his supporters to believe that, and he wants the Republicans to take that line. So to have some sort of joint resolution of censure or rebuke or whatever would require the Republicans to say the president acted wrongly and he shouldn't do it again, and that's something the president doesn't appear to be willing to tolerate.
And let me bring Amber Phillips into the discussion here. Amber Phillips is a reporter for The Fix with The Washington Post. Amber Phillips, welcome. Glad to have you aboard.
Hi there.
Hi. I've been reading your comments, and you get into some of this interesting territory involving this character whose name keeps appearing in front of us in one form or another, Lev Parnas, but also someone who was a former Devin Nunes, well, essentially one of his top lieutenants, who's now in the National Security Council. Tell us about this.
Yeah, Devin Nunes, I think, is really the key to a lot of the interactions among people in the Republican caucus within the Capitol and Ukraine efforts. He's the top House Republican on the Intelligence Committee, so he's one of the faces of the resistance against impeaching Trump. And yet there is this Ukrainian-American, one of Rudy Giuliani's business associates, his name is Lev Parnas, who is out there through a lawyer saying, "Let me testify. I can tell you that Devin Nunes was helping us dig up dirt on Joe Biden. I can testify that one of his top aides was meeting with us at the Trump Hotel this summer to talk about this. I can testify that," and this part was in the House Democrats report on they released Monday on wrongdoing alleged by the president. But Lev Parnas is saying, "I can also testify that there was somebody, a former staff member of Devin Nunes, who's now at the National Security Council, Kash Patel, trying to be part of Trump's thinking on Ukraine, even though Ukraine wasn't part of his profile."
I'm wondering what your thoughts are. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, please. Finish your thought.
Well, I was going to try to sum that all up by saying, if you're confused when you hear me say that, I am too, in part because there are these like little pieces that Devin Nunes is a part of that we haven't yet holistically put together.
Well, I'm getting some tweets about the role of people like Mulvaney and Bolton and so forth. I mean, at this point, I guess Bolton has come out and said that he will wait until he gets some kind of direction about whether Congress has the upper hand here or whether the executive has the upper hand here. But I don't know how he's going to get that. I mean, there is a tactic that seems preeminent here, and that's one of on the Republicans' part and certainly on President Trump's part of delay, despite the president's saying he wants to get this over as quick as possible.
Yeah, I think Democrats are feeling like John Bolton's bluffing, like he doesn't really want to talk, even though he's out there in the media saying, "No, guys, I do." You through a lawyer saying, I have some stuff that hasn't been reported yet, so witnesses haven't testified to. And Democrats are going, "Okay, well, then talk." like you're not a former White House. You're a former White House advisor. You're not a current White House advisor. Why does the White House ban on talking apply to you right now? And so Adam Schiff literally told his colleagues, I think this week or late last week, "We're not going to wait for John Bolton to drum up media attention for his book deal to testify. We're going to move forward."
You know, John Bolton also talked about this as a drug deal.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. The problem with that is John Bolton likely does have a lot of information that Democrats haven't yet received. They have yet to have someone testify, "I heard Trump say, hold up the military aid so that we can ask Ukraine to investigate Democrats." They had people say, "I presumed that was what Trump wanted." John Bolton is very high up in the White House this summer when this is all going on and might have some insight that would help Democrats.
Again, with us now, Amber Phillips, reporter for The Fix, Washington Post. Can you stay with us a bit? We're going to take some phone calls.
She's on till the end.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let me get a caller on from Napa. That's Kenji. Kenji, join us. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes. My question is about once this goes to the Senate for a trial, Trump's been stonewalling in terms of refusing subpoenas for documents and for key witnesses like Mulvaney. What will happen in a trial if we try to demand those documents or those witnesses?
What about that, David Levine?
Well, we can't be entirely sure until we see how Leader McConnell decides to play it. Certainly, the the Democrats, I suppose, will ask for witnesses and then there'll be a vote. I think the more interesting side of it is going to be these witnesses the Republicans keep saying they want to hear from, the whistleblower and Hunter Biden and Adam Schiff. And of course, the majority in the Senate, all Republicans, will say, yeah, let's subpoena those people. So I think that's where it's going to be interesting. On the flip side, if Mick Mulvaney, who, remember, said in a press conference on camera, what do you think we did? Of course we'd use this for politics. If he wants to come testify, well, let him come in. If it's going to be exculpatory for the president, please come on down.
Amber, can the Democrats pursue, one of our listeners actually asked this question in a tweet, subpoenas for Pompeo or Mulvaney or Bolton in the Senate trial?
No, I get that question a lot. Good question. What it changes from Democrats investigating what happened when we go over to the Senate to Democrats prosecuting what they learned. The process for calling witnesses is something that the whole Senate is going to have to agree to, with the Chief Justice John Roberts overseeing it in a very procedural way. Republicans control the majority in the Senate, so they're going to get to control the witnesses. And I think your listener Kenzie's question gets at a really interesting dynamic shift when we go over to the Senate next year. We have Trump stonewalling everything in the House, but my colleagues have reported today that President Trump wants to have a really aggressive, put everything out there, be part of this mindset when it comes to the Senate trial, because he feels like that's the best chance for him to defend himself, because, again, this is a process controlled by Republicans.
It may be to his advantage, too, because things are moving through the courts. And if we can get things a move on, I'm not trying to read the president's mind here, but, you know, he certainly has not only Leader McConnell, but the Senate and the GOP Senate behind him. And he knows that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, take advantage of the stage that you have, which is a Republican-led Senate. And he seems to be, according to our reporting, considering telling Republicans to just rush this through and avoid a situation where John Bolton suddenly gets the clear from the courts to say, okay, wait, I'll testify against the president.
Well, once the Senate comes back, once the Senate comes back with a non-conviction, the president can essentially say, I've been fully exonerated, as he did after the Mueller investigation.
Exactly. And if this impeachment vote in the House this December happens on a partisan vote and no Republicans vote for it, which I think is a possibility, President Trump can also say the one, I got impeached by the House and exonerated by the Senate. And when I got impeached by the House, it was all by Democrats. So it just adds fuel to his argument. This is a partisan exercise.
Yeah. Professor Levine, you want to add a word?
Right. The one thing I was going to add to what Amber so wisely said is that the one thing the Democrats will have in the Senate is if the Republicans choose to call witnesses, the Democrats will have an opportunity to cross-examine them. So if a Mulvaney comes forward, the Democrats will be able to ask that person questions, and I'm sure some of them will be uncomfortable questions. But it is absolutely true that McConnell and the Republicans will be running the show.
And more of your calls. We'll go next to you, Ron. Thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
So my biggest problem with President Trump is just an exaggeration of what's been going on for years. The man who would be king here has been usurping powers explicitly granted to Congress. And I think at least two articles of impeachment, if not more, need to appear there. One of them is his misappropriation of funds appropriated by Congress for the Defense Department to build his border wall, which, you know, Congress's power of the purse, not just Congress, the House's power of the purse is quite explicit in the Constitution. That's grounds for impeachment without investigation. The second thing is this whole business of, I would say, he hath set above the people overseers without the approval of the Senate. All these temporary appointments he makes that are the Constitution says, you know, that if the law creating department says you got to get Senate confirmation, then you got to get Senate confirmation. And I would argue that these are two matters. There are others, but these are two matters that are obviously and explicitly constitutional matters about usurpations by the executive branch that don't require any investigation and are certainly grounds for impeachment without waiting for the courts to rule, because Congress has also deferred too much of its power over the executive branch to waiting for the courts to say if it was okay or not. There are other things the president has done, like accepting trademarks from China a couple of weeks after he was inaugurated, which is clearly a violation of the Emoluments Clause, but that's much more arguable and you'll have all kinds of grief. But it certainly is the case that this is an opportunity for Congress to include articles that go to the Constitution itself.
Ron, I thank you for that call. What about that argument, Professor Levine? Let me go to you.
Well, let me take up one of the three points that our caller made. The question of acting officials. The president has very adroitly used power that Congress has given him. The way these acting people have been put in is that there is authority from Congress to use people who are acting. And there are limits on what can be done. And the president has pushed it to the limit. But I am not aware that he has violated those statutes. So it isn't a matter of violating the Constitution, but rather Congress, with the previous president's signature, has allowed for this kind of thing to go. It's just the president has pushed it to the limits.
And here's David, who writes to us, "I'm a hippie from the 60s and identify as farther left than probably any of your listeners. But I think President Trump's fate should be settled at the polls next November. America is nearing a civil war." And let me go back, if I may, to you, Amber Phillips. I'm interested, speaking about America going near a civil war, in addition to more judiciary hearings next week, we've also got the FISA material coming forward on Monday, in fact. The report will come forward. And we have Attorney General Barr talking about all kinds of action against former FBI officials and FISA process being changed. But you also have those who are saying there needs to be discipline and there needs to be prosecution. We're having things lining up here that are quite serious, again, in terms of partisanship and Republicans going after the Democrats.
Yeah, in addition to that, to a report about the origins of the FBI investigation into Russian meddling and whether the Trump campaign helped, which, of course, as you described, is being overseen and guided by Attorney General Bill Barr, who is
the president's personal attorney, as
Trump.
Many say, yes.
His Roy Cohen. He's been very supportive of Trump.
That is a mild
No, it's fine. We also have a Senate controlled by Republicans again, and one of Trump's most vociferous allies in there is Lindsey Graham. He's the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he has said he's going to start hearing soon into what Joe Biden may have done wrong in Ukraine. There's no evidence to date that he did anything wrong when he was vice president and doing diplomacy with Ukraine, even though some witnesses have testified they thought his son having business dealings there gave the appearance of impropriety. But I think you make a good point that over the next week, we're going to have Republicans or supporters of Trump and the administration try to take back the narrative after really devastating 2 weeks of Democrats having national security officials and diplomats testify they thought Trump politicized Ukraine.
Well, during the hearings, I can't remember who the congressman was, but a Republican congressman started talking about Joe Biden saying there were billions that were essentially pulled back or threatened against Ukraine unless they got rid of that prosecutor who was known to be corrupt by any assessment. And so the narrative kind of shift back and forth and continue to shift back and forth. Here's a listener who writes, "I read last night that there is no double jeopardy, that even if the Senate votes against impeachment, the next Senate body could go through it all over again based on what the current House has done. Is that true?" Can I go to you on this, Amber?
Can I toss to the professor? I don't know.
Well, I think, it wouldn't be in the Senate again. What would happen would be, let's say, theoretically, the House decides to impeach on narrow grounds, and that fails. Theoretically, they could come back next year and decide, oh yeah, let's talk about emoluments. Let's talk about any other issue you like. The trademarks in China, as one of our callers talked about, and then go again. Yes, theoretically, but I think politically, that is not going to happen. What are we going to do? Do this in September 2020, October 2020? It's just not going to happen.
And we go to another caller, and let's go next to Ron, who's joining us from Mill Valley. Ron, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I think that it's clear that Turley's defense of the Democrats
haven't provided enough evidence rings hollow. As long as Trump continues to keep relevant, knowledgeable witnesses away from the investigation.
I thank you for that point, and you're nodding your head, David Levine.
Right. That's absolutely true. That's the flaw in what Professor Charlie said. He didn't say a word yesterday about the fact that the president is withholding these people. Professor Charlie said, well, why don't you give the courts a chance, knowing full well that that would take months to resolve. The president could release all of these people tomorrow to say, I am so innocent. I want them all to go next week. Let's schedule it. Let's get them all down there. And in fact, that perfect call, I want to be there too.
Let me thank the caller and go right to another caller, and that's you, Jeff. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. I was really fascinated by the historical perspective that all the legal scholars were bringing, you know, Andrew Johnson and all that. And I was really fascinated by each of the statements the four legal scholars made, but was really shocked when the fourth, the Republican scholar, kind of had the opposing view. I was, naive. I didn't realize the three were Democrat and one was Republican. But I found him to be the most credible.
Actually, Jonathan Turley is not a Republican. In fact, he voted for Hillary Clinton. He said that.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, it was represented by the Republican.
For their point of view, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But I found him to be the most credible because he laid his cards on the table, whereas then the one Democratic legal scholar said, you can name your child Barron, but it doesn't make him a Barron. And it just sort of made me think that the framing that these people were using to justify their argument was really based on their views of Trump and their political views. So I was really kind of shocked that she would say something like that when I thought this whole process was supposed to be just based on, you know, their sole interpretation of what their view was of the Constitution or of the law.
Yeah, Jeff, I appreciate your weighing in here. I'm just, I know, David Levine, you want to say something about this, but there's a lot that's been made out of that comment by Pamela Karlan, and she tendered an apology for it because there is a kind of verboten notion that you shouldn't talk about the children of particularly presidents. Rush Limbaugh, remind listeners, said some very pejorative things about Chelsea Clinton and was taken to task for it. Not enough in my judgment, but in many people's minds, this was pretty innocuous. You know, she was making a joke, maybe a bad joke, but a joke.
Right. She was making a joke. She apologized for it. If I was going to help her write it, I would have said, just because the president calls his daughters princess doesn't mean that they're princesses. That would have been a better way to do it.
Well, here's Bob who asks, the Republicans keep saying that some pro-President Trump witnesses were not called on to testify. Does anyone know who these people might be, since President Trump himself has forbidden testimony from his administration?
I think what we keep hearing is it's the whistleblower and Hunter Biden. I haven't heard any other names who would be theoretically exculpatory. And I guess Adam Schiff. They want to go after Adam Schiff because they think that he had some contact with the whistleblower in advance.
Those are the main names, Amber Phillips, aren't they? Any others?
Those are the main names. I was trying to think through who they said yesterday. I think to the extent that the whistleblower can continue to be anonymous, and I have no indication that he or she will be outed, but to the extent they continue to be anonymous, it really helps Republicans argue, at least implicitly, there's come some kind of deep state conspiracy to get Trump. Here's this like shadowy figure in the CIA collecting information from White House aides and writing a report and trying to get the president impeached. That's the way Republicans tell it. Of course, the whistleblower didn't advocate for anything to happen to the president. He or she just put together the facts as we know it. And then the Inspector General and the Justice Department said, I want to share this with Congress because I think it's urgent. And that's when impeachment started going. But I think I don't take Republicans at face value when they say, we want to talk to the whistleblower, because it helps their case that to keep this person anonymous.
And we go to another caller, and that's you, Neil. You're on the air on Forum. Good morning.
Yeah, if one of your legal experts could talk about whether it's true that going through the courts is going to take too long, and when we have special circumstances like this, why we can't have a direct petition to the Supreme Court, or in instances where we already have a decision by the district court to skip the circuit courts and have the Supreme Court decide these right away. And that can be dual-tracked at the same time impeachment goes from the House into the Senate, and you can call witnesses at the Senate just like you can at a trial, so that their testimony could come out you know, at the Senate trial based on a ruling that's dual-tracked through the Supreme Court now rather than going through each tier, which also begs the question of why McGahn has taken so long and what the Democrats didn't move earlier on that one since that came out in, let's say, March.
Now, what about moving faster, more accelerated to SCOTUS, Professor Levine?
It could happen. United States versus Nixon, the tapes case did happen relatively quickly. So, yes, it could happen, but you're still talking about a matter of months. And, you know, the calendar is a big deal here. I think it was Ranking Member Collins who kept going back to that. This is all about the clock and the calendar for the Democrats. And there's something to that. You really don't want to get too close to the election.
Well, but they are getting close to the election. And Amber Phillips, let me get you to comment
right.
on that.
Yeah. Yeah, Democrats have this like artificial timeline to get it off their plate by Christmas so that they're not technically in an election year impeaching a president. That's never happened in modern history, an election year of the president. Clinton's was right up against the midterms. That being said, I just think that's a distinction without a difference. We're already in a presidential election. What's the difference between December and waiting into January, February, March? Yeah, I think Democrats are like have it. To me, it rings artificial and hollow and political to say we got to get this done by December. I should point out that their argument, which they made in this report they released this week about all of Trump's wrongdoing, is if we don't impeach him ASAP, he's going to be motivated to do this again, to try to interfere or ask a foreign country to interfere in our elections again. Again, I have problems with that logic because it's likely the House impeaches Trump, the Senate exonerates him, and he's still president to do whatever he wants when he talks to foreign leaders, whether the House impeached him or not.
Point taken. And let me thank Neil for his call and go right to another caller. Owen, that's you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah. To me, the Democrats' best argument is for them to verbally, loudly demand that Trump release the actual phone call. That he's locked up. If it's a perfect phone call, what's to hide?
Well, a transcript was released.
A summary
right,
was released,
it was
a not
summary
a transcript.
Transcript, but it was a transcript.
And also my understanding is the reason why we have the summary, the reason why there were all those note takers is because they haven't been taping those conversations.
Well, I think they learned a lesson with President Nixon, didn't they?
Right.
Speaking about lessons, Joe writes, speaking of political motivations for impeachment, wasn't the Clinton impeachment largely political? Inviting foreign interference in our election seems a much more serious threat to national security, much more impeachable than just lying about a sexual encounter. And that argument has certainly been brought forward by the Democrats as well. Let me bring another caller aboard here. And Tim, that's you. You're on the air.
Hello. I was a law student of Jonathan Turley's at George Washington in 2008-2009. And, you know, listening to him yesterday, I was reminded of two facts that Turley was famous for among the student body. And the first is complimentary, which is that he's a very engaging speaker and creator of storylines. You know, his talk about his "even my dog's angry" was hilarious. But the other thing is his very famous and...
And what do you say? His dog was a Labradoodle or something?
Right. I was hoping the name was Fowler.
Labradoodles don't get angry.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it was a funny capstone. But he was also very famous for always seeking attention by taking the contrary view, finding the viewpoint that no one was expressing and finding a funny way to promote that in order to get more publicity and attention for himself.
Well, it's good to hear a former student characterizing his professor as a contrarian, and I thank you for that call, Tim. It's good to hear from you this morning. And we're also not hearing from Congressman McClintock, who we had expected to have on with us. I don't know why he has gone AWOL, but I just wanted listeners to know that. And I'm going to read some tweets that have been coming in here. A listener tweets, "The intricacies of this process are fun to explore, but we all know how this will end. Impeachment along party lines, acquittal along party lines, and President Trump will be reelected." Well, I'm not so sure about that last one, but we'll have to wait and see. I'm sorry. He hasn't gone AWOL. He's voting. All right. Thank you, Judy. I want to make sure that was...
He's doing his job.
He's doing his job, right. Always known to be... McClintock was a responsible congressman. Here's another tweet from a listener. It says, Republicans want to make this about policy disagreement and emotion in politics, but this is about Trump using taxpayer money to leverage dangerous political manipulation of investigations in Ukraine. And so the arguments go on back and forth. What's next, Amber Phillips? Can you give us a kind of spotlight view of what's next, what's coming up?
Sure. This week was, I like to think of this as the transition from the impeachment inquiry into actual impeachment, the handover from the House Intelligence Committee investigating what happened to the House Judiciary Committee, which is going to take the lead on writing articles of impeachment. They just announced on Monday they're going to have a hearing where they debate the report ostensibly as a way to lay up for the American public what articles of impeachment they're going to write up. I would assume that lawmakers and staff are probably drafting something right now because they're in a very rushed timeline. Again, this artificial end of year date that they have for themselves. So it's possible by the middle to end of next week, we actually see the articles of impeachment against Trump, and the Judiciary Committee would vote on that. And then Democrats' tight timeline is to bring that to the full House by the first week, the third week of December, right before Christmas.
And the likeliness of that, if you were giving odds?
They seem pretty determined to move this quickly.
Yeah. Amber Phillips, good to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Amber Phillips, again, is reporter for The Fix with The Washington Post. David Levine, always good to have you aboard. Thanks
for having me again.
David Levine is professor at UC Hastings College of the Law, and we also spoke earlier with Congressman Ro Khanna, and we spoke with, Anna Edgerton of Bloomberg. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Larberg, Ariana Prell, and Susan Britton. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. Engineer is Annie Bringer. And our interns are Caroline Smith and Sam Klein-Markman. Executive editor is Ethan Lindsay. Chief content officer is Holly Kernan. Thank you for being a part of the program. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.